this is Sasha Adi, host of the PCOS Challenge radio show, designed to help women overcome polycystic ovarian syndrome, a hormonal and reproductive disorder that affects 1 in 10 women of childbearing age. We'll be bringing you the best information on fertility, hirsutism, weight loss, nutrition, mental health, and other conditions surrounding PCOS. The goal of the PCOS Challenge is to inspire and motivate you to make positive changes in your life. So tune in regularly to get insights from leading experts and the support you need. This is Sasha Adi. Help spread the word and take the PCOS Challenge. Hello everyone, this is Sasha Adi of the PCOS Challenge radio show and also the PCOS Challenge network and support site at www.pcoschallenge.com. Today we have a special guest, Monica Woolsey, who is a PCOS and nutrition expert. She is president and founder of After the Diet Network and is a nutritionist and exercise physiologist with 25 years of experience in nutrition and exercise counseling. She received her bachelor's degree in nutrition from Cornell University in Ithaca, New York, and her master's degree in kinesiology from the University of Colorado in Boulder, Colorado. I would encourage everyone listening to grab a pen and paper to jot down Monica's insights, because I'm sure she will be sharing with us a lot of things that will be helpful for us, specifically women suffering from polycystic ovarian syndrome. Monica, it's a pleasure having you on tonight.
Oh, it's my pleasure being here. Thank you so much for inviting me, Sasha.
Okay. So can you tell us a little bit more about what you're doing in the PCOS community right now?
What I'm doing is working on building a network of dietitians and eventually nurses and doctors who thoroughly understand all of the aspects of PCOS so that we have a comprehensive place for women with PCOS to come, knowing that they're going to get a healthcare provider who knows what's going on and can really help them. Been doing trainings all over the country, and right now most of the network is located in Phoenix and in the Southern California area, but pretty soon we'll be launching some new providers in the Minneapolis area, and later on in the year on the East Coast in the Charlottesville, Virginia area.
Oh, good. I'm glad you said that you're creating a network of people who are knowledgeable about PCOS, because as many women with polycystic ovarian syndrome have found, that's one thing that's lacking in the medical community. Physicians, clinicians who are knowledgeable about or are familiar with polycystic ovarian syndrome.
Yeah, it actually is a syndrome that found me quite by accident. And I was working on a website for eating disorders, and I kept receiving emails from women talking about polycystic ovary syndrome, and just from things that they were saying and from what I understood about it, it sounded like there was a lot of information out there that was not consistent, and that doctors either didn't know about the syndrome or didn't know what to do with it when they found it, or they may be, for example, for a woman going into a dermatologist for her acne, may want to treat one symptom but not look at the comprehensive picture. And it just seemed like there was a huge need for dietitians and doctors and nurses to get together and have a unified message and have it be a scientifically accurate message, so that if they're going to trust us and follow the advice, that it's advice that actually helps.
Absolutely, absolutely. And supposing that this is one of the things that After the Diet Network is focusing on.
Trying to come up with a comprehensive message that whether you're in Minnesota or Virginia or Arizona or California, you know when you see this network name that you're going to get the best possible care and information that's out there for what you're looking for help with.
Okay. This kind of fell into your lap sort of with all the women who kept coming to you. you know, 1 in 10, that's what research is suggesting, around 1 in 10 women have polycystic ovarian syndrome, yet so many, you know, there are not that many people who are knowledgeable about it. So I commend you for the work that you're doing.
Well, thanks. I just felt like after getting email after email after email that maybe that was telling me something, that it was my job to put this all together. And I honestly think that the incidence may be higher than 1 in 10.
Higher.
Yeah.
I totally agree with you.
It's not even a syndrome that doctors agree on how to define. So I hear over and over again how women go to the doctor thinking that they have symptoms, and then they're told that they don't have it because the physician may not be looking at the right tests or not quite understand. And for that reason, I think a lot of polycystic is overlooked and not diagnosed.
And so I've been following some of the things that you and your team are doing, including your InSyst blog and lectures, and I'm really excited about all the things that you guys are doing. I've been reading your blogs, and it's a very valuable, valuable source of information. And so I just wanted you to let everyone know how they can reach you, reach your blog.
The blog is listed at www.insyst, which is spelled INCYST.blogspot.com. And it's a collaborative effort. Every professional who's gone through my training is linked in as an author. So you might go in there and find Ellen Goldfarb's history or story, for example, of her own quest for having kids. And another dietitian has put up a recipe from a cookbook that she's writing and so forth. And I like to put up research that I've found and translate it into English and then base recommendations on that make the research usable. Every Thursday, I put up information about a different food of the week, which surprised me how popular that became, how quickly. And actually, the feedback from the participants on the blog helped me to understand that a big problem with polycystic ovary syndrome is that women are afraid to eat anything because they don't know what's right and they're afraid to do the wrong thing. So it's just grown from being this tiny little blog about a year ago to now we have probably about 1,000 page views a month, which is very exciting to know that we're able to help that many people.
Yeah, that is exciting. And I have to confess that the food of the week is actually my favorite thing as well.
What's your favorite food that you've seen so far?
Cauliflower.
And it's because I just go, sometimes I'm really at a loss for what to put up there, and I just go in my refrigerator and see what I'm cooking that week and put something up, and I try and make it seasonal as well to help with grocery bills. And I encourage anybody who's been on the blog, or you as well, Sasha, if there's a food that you would like to know more about that you haven't seen in that feature, to let me know. And it would help me a lot to get ideas about what people want to know about.
Oh, great. I think last week's food was Ezekiel bread.
Yes, Ezekiel bread.
I think women, especially women with PCOS, are scared of bread. So I found it interesting that you did have a bread on there. And it, like you said, people are scared of eating because everywhere you look, you know, we are bombarded with all this information about what we should not eat. And it's refreshing to see someone putting something out there about what we should eat.
Well, the thing that bothers me about PCOS is that, unfortunately, it's been given the name syndrome, and that's such a scary-sounding word, and it can feel like you've got something really serious and your life has been taken away from you, and all of a sudden you're counting calories, and if you're going for fertility, you're monitoring hormones and body temperature, and life just is about monitoring lab values. And what I'm trying to do with the blog and with InSyst is make sure that women who have the syndrome understand that that's not what their life is destined to be. They can enjoy food. They can go on vacation. They can live the life that they had before. They might need to be a little bit more conscious about some things, but food should be something that's fun and not a drag just because you happen to have a certain diagnosis.
Yeah, there are so many women on the PCOSChallenge.com site, as well, I'm sure, any woman with PCOS, who are really frustrated, about not losing weight or gaining significant amount of weight. And They're just really confused. They don't know what to do. And I would just like you to list a few things, few steps that you think women, specifically women with PCOS, can take right now to move into a different direction, to promote weight loss, to promote healthier living.
Okay, let's see. I would say the first one is to just remember that you're not perfect. And there's no such thing as perfect eating, and we all have certain foods that we like that aren't quote-unquote healthy. If you give yourself permission to not be perfect, I think the rest of the steps that I would give would be easier to follow. One is think about what you need to eat and not necessarily what you should be cutting out to make it more positive. And a lot of times when working with people and putting together meal plans, what they comment on is that a healthy way of eating actually leaves you feeling more full and satisfied than an unhealthy way of eating. Mm. And what happens, for example, when you try and cut out all your carbohydrates because you've been told to follow a low-carb diet is that you end up being hungry. You don't have fruits. You don't have vegetables. You don't have any milk or yogurt. You don't have any breads or grains. And all of those foods are the ones that help keep your blood sugar more stable. And so if you make a point to make sure that you're getting at least 5 servings of fruits and vegetables a day, if not more, and have some healthy grains, you may find that you don't have the carbohydrate cravings and that you may find that you're not fighting those cravings all day. Another thing that I would strongly encourage is variety. We all see the list of the top 10 perfect foods, and we want to tend to stick with that. And you can become very bored with eating very quickly if you only have 10 foods on your list of foods that you allow. So that's another reason I like to do the food of the week list, because I really try and go into what's in season. Right now it's citrus. Strawberries are coming into season, but I may talk about apples in the fall. And if you follow a seasonal way of eating, there's a whole lot more variety and a whole lot more fun. So those would probably be my top 3 rules for healthy eating.
You make a good point, because when people are trying to follow a diet or strict diet, it limits the amount of foods you can eat. So you'll be eating the same 10 foods for weeks, for months, and then you get bored, and then you probably start to crave other foods that are not so healthy for you.
And I actually got into PCOS in a different way than the average practitioner did. I worked in eating disorders for a long time before I worked in PCOS. And what I see is that I believe quite a few eating disorders developed that were actually undiagnosed PCOS, and women started eating in an eating disordered fashion in order to manage their weight. And that's what I'm trying to prevent with the recommendations that I'm giving you here.
Your most recent blog dealt with 500 calorie breakfast. And when I saw that, because we're encouraged for the most part to count our calories, and when I saw 500 calories, I was like, that sounds like a lot for one set in one setting, but can you go into that that blog?
Why I did the 500 calorie breakfast?
Yeah.
Well, first of all, breakfast is a meal that oftentimes gets skipped, and it can be the most important meal. And I like to call it the anchor meal. If you have a good solid breakfast, you tend to not have cravings and not kind of snack all day on other things that you didn't want to snack on. Another thing is that women with PCOS oftentimes have sleep disorders, and they skip breakfast. And one of the things I really work on is if you can get your good breakfast in and get everything in order during the day, it's easier to fall asleep at night. And the better you sleep, the less insulin resistance that you tend to have. So I like to have breakfast be as equal in size and calories as lunch and dinner, and not have a small breakfast and a big dinner.
Yeah, and you know, it's a vicious cycle. I think most women, from what I've heard, most women they're with PCOS, they're like, oh, I'm not hungry in the morning, and then the biggest meals come later on in the day, and then they snack during the night. So.
Well, one reason they may not be hungry is because they're struggling with insulin resistance and blood sugar fluctuations. And something that can happen is that blood sugar can drop in the middle of the night if you're having trouble with your blood sugar levels. And then the way that the body responds is that you have a high blood sugar in the morning. In fact, if you're monitoring your blood sugar, you may find that you have what's called a high fasting level. And so what I really try and encourage is normalizing sleep patterns so that blood sugar is not doing that and sabotaging your attempts to eat well. And so practicing good sleep hygiene and making sure that you have breakfast can be one of the most important things that you do. And one of the rules that I have, I don't like to have rules, but a lot of my rules are about breaking rules that people have been told in other situations, is that breakfast can be anything that you eat as long as it's before 10 o'clock in the morning. It doesn't have to be at your breakfast table before you leave the house. It can be something that you carry in the car or something that you keep in your office, and it doesn't even have to be breakfast food if you're not a breakfast food kind of a person. So when you break that old rule about breakfast and make a new rule about breakfast, you may find that you can succeed at it.
Oh, yeah, those are interesting points. Well, that's why a lot of women with PCOS are encouraged to take the glucose tolerance test.
Yeah, the fasting glucose tolerance test?
Yes, yes. Is that to monitor the...
The fasting glucose test is actually the gold standard for diagnosing polycystic ovary syndrome, and you fast overnight, you don't eat anything at all, and then you drink a bottle of something called Glucola, which is a very, very sweet soda, and then every hour for 2, 3, 4 hours, you test your blood sugar to see how well your body's handling sugar. And that's really the key in polycystic ovary syndrome, is not how high your insulin levels are or what your blood sugar is at any minute in time, but what happens when you give yourself a huge, what's called a bolus, or a huge amount of sugar all at once. And what happens in polycystic ovary syndrome is because the hormones are not working, is that when you have those huge amounts of sugar, they don't go anywhere. They float around in the blood, and you don't get the energy to the parts of the body that need it. So it can become a vicious cycle because you're craving carbohydrates and sweets, and then when you eat them, they don't go anywhere, and it becomes harder and harder for the body to manage that.
Wow. And is it true that insulin is stored in the fat cells?
Insulin is a storage hormone. So the problem is when you're fluctuating back and forth between large amounts of sugar and then dieting and crash dieting to counter that, your body starts to make larger and larger amounts of insulin in order to take care of those large boluses of sugar. And so the insulin doesn't fluctuate up and down like the glucose does. So the insulin levels will be high 24 hours a day, which means that 24 hours a day, your body is set up to store fat and store calories, and it makes it harder and harder to lose weight. And so the vicious cycle is the binge eating and the craving the carbohydrates, and then the body kind of upping its set point and increasing its insulin levels, which makes it harder for you to lose weight.
Okay, so how do we combat that insulin resistance?
How do you combat insulin resistance? One of the things that you can do is really not go on a crash diet. That would be my number one rule. The 500-calorie breakfast was actually part of a 1,500-calorie diet. So unless you're shorter than 5'4", I wouldn't really put anyone on less than 1,500 calories because it's hard to not have cravings if you're eating less than that.
Mm-hmm.
Another thing that you can do is start to put more protein in your diet. And when you have carbohydrates in the diet, make sure that they're healthy ones. So, for example, the Ezekiel bread it's a bread that is made with bean flour, which is really easy on the blood sugar, so to speak. Beans, hummus is one of the greatest foods for women with PCOS. Quinoa is a protein that you saw on the blog a few weeks ago, which is high protein or carbohydrate, but is also high in protein. And making sure that every time that you eat, you have something with protein in it. That can be even a slice of string cheese. It can be a cup of yogurt. But every time that you eat, there should be protein. You should never be eating something that's primarily sugar, like a Mrs. Fields cookie, for example. When you have that craving, you should immediately be thinking about what kinds of protein you can have for a snack
along with a carbohydrate to help minimize the amount of carbohydrate that you actually end up eating.
Okay, yeah. You know, I think the thing with protein is many people think of protein as, you know, the meats, the but in actuality, you can have cottage cheese that has protein in it.
So, you know, what I've been recommending more of is ricotta cheese.
Ricotta cheese.
Because ricotta cheese is, when they make cottage cheese, what they do is they take milk and they separate it out into the curds and whey from the, like, mm-hmm. Little Miss Muffet poem. And the curds are the cottage cheese and the whey is whey protein, like whey protein powder. But ricotta cheese is just a version of whey protein powder that you can buy in the dairy case. Mm-hmm. So you can put it on toast. You can make your Italian food with it. It's a very easy thing that you can add to your diet. Put it on some whole wheat crackers in the afternoon for a snack. You can use peanut butter. A lot of women are afraid of peanut butter because of the fat content, but the fat's actually a healthy fat. Things that you think of as meal proteins, like a slice of turkey, is not a bad
uh-huh.
snack, or a can of tuna. I actually found a little snack at the dollar store the other day. It was a little can of salmon that had some mandarin oranges in it, which was a great little snack that you could carry
wow.
to work and have in the middle of the afternoon. Yeah, at the dollar store of all places.
Oh, wow.
That might be the food of the week this week.
I'll look out for it.
Yeah, it's made by Chicken of the Sea if you want to look for it.
Oh, wow. Okay. Thank you. So you just touched on fats in peanut butter. I personally stay away. You know what? I started tracking my daily food intake online and realized that I was taking in a lot more fat than I didn't think I got that much fat in at all. But through tracking my daily intake, I realized I was taking in a lot more fat than I thought I was. And I don't eat peanut butter and stay away from many of those things. So how can we make sure that we keep in our diets the good fats and stay away from the not so good fats?
Well, I have a really easy rule for that, and for those of you who are listening, who are writing this down, please don't be discouraged when you hear that. It just is a matter of getting to know which foods are going to work and which ones aren't. And the first few times you go to the store, you may be putting some things back on the shelf. Any fat that begins with the letter C or the letter S, you want to do your best to stay away from. So with the only exception to that is canola oil. Canola oil is fine. But anything that has cottonseed oil, corn oil, soybean oil, safflower, sunflower, you want to do your absolute best to stay away from. They're pro-inflammatory, and they tend to promote insulin resistance. The best oils and the ones that I tell all of my clients to be sure that they have in their kitchen are olive oil and canola oil. Peanut oil works well, and any nut oil if you want to start cooking with that. But what you'll start finding when you start reading labels is that most processed foods, especially chips and crackers and so forth, are made with the safflower, sunflower, soybean. Most ready-made salad dressings are made with soybean oil. And if you eat out a lot, the oil that tends to be used in restaurant cooking is corn and soy oil. Mm. So you want to start asking and being assertive when you're eating out in restaurants about what kind of oil they're cooking your omelets with and so forth.
Oh, wow. And that's such an easy way to remember. No
it's
C's
so
easy. Or S's.
The S and C oils, you know, that is so easy to remember. And the other thing to keep in mind is that nuts are a very healthy fat. So you'll hear a lot of times recommendations that you got to eat walnuts because they're high in omega-3s. But the reality is every single nut that's out there has a benefit. So what I always do, I like to shop at a store that has bulk groceries, and I just buy a pound of whatever is on sale that week. And sometimes it's macadamia nuts, and sometimes it's almonds, and sometimes it's walnuts. Every single one of those has been shown to be beneficial for something that's related to polycystic ovary syndrome. And you can put those in your oatmeal in the morning. If you bake, you can put them in your muffins. Nuts are just so versatile. And I encourage, they're a great snack as well. So I encourage you to make sure that you have plenty of nuts in your diet.
You're right. They're easy to carry around with you and snack on. We shouldn't go overboard, right? They're
Right.
Yes, yes. So with everything, including the healthy stuff like nuts, we should take in moderation.
Right. So I don't know if you think of a tablespoon or some, if you go into a bagel shop, for example, and they measure out your cream cheese, a little container about that size is about the amount of nuts that you should have. But you'll be amazed if you add that into your snack or if you're making trail mix or put that into your oatmeal. It really does help you to feel full, more full than if you don't have the nuts in your diet.
Oh, wow. I'm going to take a short break, and I think there's a caller or a few people in the chat room who probably want to ask you questions.
Okay.
I'm going to take a short break, and I'll come right back to you.
Okay.
This is William R. Patterson from BaronSeries.com, number one wealth coach and proud sponsor of the PCOS Challenge. Are you a woman who wants to overcome the symptoms of polycystic ovarian syndrome to live a happier and healthier life? Then the PCOS Challenge is for you. The PCOS Challenge is a 16-week fitness, nutrition, and mental wellness program that provides you with coaching from leading experts to help regain your confidence and completely transform your life. By participating in the program, not only will you have a new, healthier body and success habits that can last a lifetime, you will also have the opportunity to receive cash rewards in excess of $1,000 and other surprise gifts. Understand, you are not alone. Visit the PCOSChallenge.com support network today and set up your free profile and begin connecting with other women who understand what you're going through, as well as receive valuable information on managing PCOS and what you need to know to be healthy. Be sure to encourage your spouses and loved ones to join the PCOSChallenge.com support network too. This is William R. Patterson. Help spread the word and take the PCOS Challenge.
Let's get into environmental estrogens. I was reading one of your blogs earlier, and it dealt with environmental estrogens. Yeah, the title was Pump Up Your Progesterone, Avoid Environmental Estrogens. What exactly should we be looking out for that contain these environmental estrogens?
Environmental estrogens are chemicals that are so closely like estrogen. When they get in the body, they act like estrogen, and their shape is so similar to an estrogen molecule that they have the ability to get into an estrogen receptor, but because they're not estrogen, they don't have the same activity, and it fools the body, and it messes up all of the hormone feedback systems. And there is some thought that because we have so many man-made chemicals these days that resemble estrogens, that it may be something that's hurting our fertility. And in fact, they're finding that it's not just humans that have infertility problems. Other animals, reptiles in particular, are not reproducing the way that they used to. So environmental estrogen specialists have identified that chemicals that I'm trying to think of some good examples. If you're looking at cleaning solvents, inks, glues, fertilizers, any kind
mm-hmm.
of chemical that really was not in existence before the 1900 that's in the environment today, you really want to do your best to stay away from those, if at all possible. So, for example, if you're trying to get pregnant, it may not be a good time to be remodeling your home and using paint
mm-hmm.
and carpet glue and tile glue and things like that, and really try and stay away from and minimize your exposure to those. There are actually some natural estrogens as well. One is soy and one is flax. They have biological estrogens in them. But those are a little bit kinder and gentler on the body. With the INSIST program, I tend to discourage women from getting too much soy in the diet because it can also affect thyroid function. And it's thought to interfere with hormone function. And if you have any kind of history in your family of female cancers, like breast cancer, you really want to minimize your intake of soy. But flax, we're finding, can be very beneficial. And
mm-hmm.
we found out kind of by accident last summer that when you put flax into the program that we're using, it seems to help boost fertility. And I don't want to make any promises here because, every response to the program is individual, but we do seem to think that flax, in addition to the other omega-3s that we've been recommending, seems to help correct the hormone imbalances and promote fertility and promote better PCOS management.
And, you know, I'm sure many women with PCOS, that they'll be glad to take any advice that you have. So,
well, it's funny, you know, what I love about working with PCOS and infertility is I have a kind of a captive audience, and I was just talking to a Whole Foods manager the other day. We're going to be doing a food tour in Venice, California later this month, and I told her, these women will stand on their head and drink acid lemonade if I tell them to. So it's real important, I feel like, knowing that and knowing that there's an anxiety and almost sometimes a level of desperation that I am very hesitant to come out with any kind of a recommendation unless I feel that it can be beneficial, because I don't want anyone feeling like I hurt them in any way. I want to be sure that anything that I do, even if it doesn't help them to become pregnant alone, helps to get them ready to succeed at that if they choose to follow the program and then go work with a reproductive endocrinologist.
Wonderful. Well, we have a caller on the line. She wants to ask you a question.
Okay.
Oh, hi. My name is Lydia. I have a question. I was diagnosed with PCOS maybe like 10 years ago. I'm 29 now, and I'm a black woman. And the way I was basically diagnosed was I had acanthos, and they did a biopsy and went to the doctor. They did ultrasounds and everything else, and they told me I had PCOS. Make a long story short, I do notice that when my insulin, I guess, is higher, I'm not quite sure, that the acanthos gets pretty bad. Like, I have it all over my chest, the folds of my arms. And I guess what I'm trying to figure out is, I know there's a difference with women of color, from, like, Hispanic women to black women. I just want to know why there's a disparity between those two.
Why women of color have more of a tendency to have the problem?
Yes. Like, not necessarily PCOS is a problem, but why? What is the acanthos, and why do we get it, I guess, as I'm trying to figure out.
You know, the exact mechanism behind it, I don't know. But I do agree with you that it seems to be more prevalent in women of color.
Mm-hmm.
And I actually heard a doctor say one time that it's so prevalent that sometimes women don't even go say anything to their physician about it because every other woman in the family had it and they didn't think there was anything wrong.
Mm-hmm.
But I also know that it goes away, as you said, if you're managing your insulin levels and managing your insulin levels.
Mm-hmm.
It tends to go away. So it's unfortunately a very visible indicator that there's an imbalance. But the good news is that if you're doing things to manage your insulin function, it shouldn't be that much of an issue. I do know PCOS is very strongly genetic. I think what the experts will tell you is 50% of PCOS, the influence, is coming from your genetic makeup.
Mm-hmm.
25% is from your diet, and then the other 25% would be other lifestyle factors. And so what I notice is that in populations that we knew long before PCOS was such a big issue, we knew there was a high prevalence of diabetes. Those are the women that tend to get PCOS, and it's a very strongly genetic condition.
I'm realizing that, too. My father's diabetic, and so is my mom, so I see the correlation between the two now.
Yeah. Yeah. The other thing that's interesting is that if you have a lot of men in your family who are balding, that can be an indication that you're at risk for PCOS. As you know, losing your hair is a symptom of PCOS,
mm-hmm.
and so that's kind of an indication if the men in your family have that same genetic makeup that you may be at risk.
Okay.
Interesting.
Great. Thank you
so much. Thank you, Lydia.
I appreciate it. Thank you.
Thanks. Monica, there's another question, and this came from court staff in the chat room. She wants you to further explain about sleeping disorders associated with PCOS, or sleeping associated with PCOS.
Oh, this is one of my favorite pieces to talk about with PCOS because I think it's very under-recognized. And I had actually, in my training, I have a lecture from a sleep disorder expert on sleep disorders because there's so many eating disorders related with sleep. And he had estimated that maybe 6% of women with PCOS had a sleep disorder. And I did a survey on my website of about 1,000 women, and we found that it was closer to about 65-70% of women had some kind of sleep dysfunction. So it could be anything from insomnia, restless legs, night eating, nightmares, sleepwalking would count in there. And then the one that is most commonly recognized is sleep apnea. So they're not quite sure why. They're just now even willing to recognize that all of that goes on. But I would say that every single woman that I worked with has some kind of disrupted sleep pattern. And it may have gotten started if they have children when they were feeding on demand and their kids were up throughout the night. It may be from anxiety. A lot. If you're not sleeping well, sometimes you get yourself in a vicious cycle of skipping breakfast, like I mentioned, and then living on sugar and caffeine all day long, and then the caffeine's not out of your system, so you can't go to sleep at night, and then you're too tired to exercise. So it becomes a very complicated issue, but I can say that the women that I work with who do prioritize better sleep do lose weight, and they do feel better, and they do balance their hormones more easily than women who don't make that a priority.
Oh, great. So have you heard of night sweats in PCOS women?
Well, night sweats are a sign of hormone imbalance. And if you're going through menopause, you can have night sweats. So if you're having imbalances in estrogen and testosterone, you could easily have night sweats as well.
Okay. I have a few more questions from the chat room. Is vegetable oil okay, considering that it may be made of soybean oil?
Actually, vegetable oil is one that you want to try and stay away from.
Okay.
So really, you know what really gets people who think they're eating healthfully is salad dressing. I challenge all of you, next time you go grocery shopping, to pick up the salad dressings on the shelf and look and see what the primary oil is. And I'd say about 80% of them are made with soybean oil. So you want to become familiar with brands like Annie's Natural is a good one, Brianna's is good, or become proficient at making your own vinaigrettes, which really only take a few minutes in your own kitchen if you want to do that. But the commercial salad dressings are one of the worst offenders as far as the wrong kinds of fats, and you want to be very careful in that department.
Oh, wow, and people are thinking just, you know, using salad dressings is healthy. But it really does sabotage, depending on the type.
Actually, that's one of the first things I will ask someone if they look like they're fairly medium or, you know, weight, but they're complaining that they're having to work really hard at it or they're having symptoms of PCOS, and you look at the diet and there's a salad every day at lunch. My first question is, what kind of salad dressing? Just a little label reading tip, too. Manufacturers have caught on that women and men, too, are starting to eliminate some of these fats from the diet. So what the label will say is may contain one or more of the following.
Mm-hmm.
And you'll see soybean, cotton, or you'll see olive oil, canola oil, da-da-da-da. And then at the end, there will be one of those S or C oils. And what that really translates into is that the manufacturer realistically is going to use whatever oil is cheapest at manufacturing time. And canola and olive are your more expensive oils, so they're more likely to not be the ones that are in the product.
Wow.
So I've been trying to find out if there's a law specifying how often they actually have to use it if it's on the label, and I can't even find that information out. So if it has one of those may contain one or more of the following, I just don't even take it home with me.
Okay. Thanks. We have a few more questions. One is, can women with PCOS develop thyroid problems too?
It's actually very common to have a thyroid problem as well as a PCOS problem. And I'm not surprised at that because the part of the brain that regulates reproductive hormones, it's called the hypothalamus, also regulates thyroid hormone. So the way I look at PCOS is it's actually an imbalance that's going on in the brain, and the hormone regulating section is particularly sensitive to that imbalance. So you may find problems in addition with growth hormone, which when growth hormone is out of balance, that's when you tend to gain weight around the waist, which is a typical PCOS body type. And stress hormones are out of balance, so you may find that you have a harder time managing stress. All of those things are signs and symptoms that the hypothalamus is out of balance.
Okay. Okay, the next question is it okay to take fat burners like hydroxycut for women with PCOS?
I always hesitate because a lot of those pills are stimulants. And knowing that, number one, I'm working with a population that's already having trouble with sleep. The last thing you want to put into the mix is a stimulant. And secondly, they're not really addressing the problem, and they can actually sabotage you in the long run as far as burning you out and burning your system out and making it harder for your body to heal. And really, even though weight gain is a problem in PCOS, and a lot of women who have it are trying to lose weight, it's not the core problem. It's a symptom of a much deeper problem. And if you're only treating the symptom, you might lose weight for a little while, but your body will find a way to work around that and get back to and probably dig a further PCOS rut for itself than it was in before you took the pill.
That's a great point. Thank you. And thanks for all the chat room and callers.
You know, I have one thing, because I realize I haven't even told you about one of the most important things that we talk about with PCOS, which you've probably seen on the blog, and that's the omega-3s and the fish oil.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things that we're really finding is that women who are having a hard time with their PCOS are not really omega-3 savvy, and they're not getting enough omega-3s in their diet. And it may be culturally there is not a lot of fish in their diet, or they're eating a lot of fast food. Or they may not like fish or never learned how to like it. And so we're really, really big on making sure that everyone we work with understands that if they truly want to get back into balance, they need to get the omega-3s in the diet. The brain, I mentioned the hypothalamus being out of balance. One of the main problems oftentimes is that there's not enough fish oil in the brain because the brain depends on that to function well for the body to heal. And I've had client after client after client come back and say that, you know, they were following the diet and doing everything I asked. It wasn't until they got their omega-3s in the diet that they started sleeping better, feeling less stressed, and not having as many cravings, and the weight just all of a sudden came off, and they weren't doing anything different with their food. So that's crucial.
Wow. Yeah, that's a great point. I wasn't quite aware of its importance or how important it was to women with PCOS.
Well, you know, what's interesting is that people hear about fish oil or omega-3s and they take this supplement, but they really don't work that well if you don't also follow the S&C rule that I mentioned earlier. You have to do both things. So you have to put extra omega-3s in the diet, but you also have to take out the other fats that tend to make it harder for those omega-3s to do their job. So people might take a fish oil pill here or there and not notice any difference and quit taking them. And what they don't understand is that it's part of a bigger picture, and you have to do several things at once in order to see things work. But what is astounding to me is how quickly, if you do this and you do it right, carbohydrate cravings will virtually disappear. And rather than cutting carbohydrates, I agree that most women who have PCOS should eat fewer carbohydrates. But the carbohydrates I want them to take out of the diet are the ones that they're binging on because they're craving carbohydrates. If you just tell someone who's craving carbohydrates to not eat them, then all they think about is the carbohydrates they're not supposed to be eating. But if you make the cravings go away, then all of a sudden it just becomes something that you can actually do.
Okay. People are going crazy in the chat room. They really want to ask you a question. Another question is this Mediterranean diet that you mentioned in your blog. I guess we have people who've read your blog, and court staff says that she noticed that you mentioned PCOS diet as an aggressive Mediterranean diet. Can you touch on this?
Yeah, I can't emphasize enough that the foods that are eaten around the Mediterranean are really the foods that you want to eat as much as possible. So that's lots of seafood, lots of fresh fruits and vegetables, lots of nuts, If you like Greek food, if you like Italian food with a few modifications, you can do great with that. And if you go move down into the Middle East, you know, I'm talking about hummus and some of the foods that come out of Morocco and, you know, some of those northern African countries. Those are all the foods that you want to have as much as possible in the diet. And the closer to the farm that you can get them and the less processed, the better.
Oh, yeah.
So it's really, really pushing that and not just, you know, oh, we'll have fish a couple times a week or we'll have Italian here or there, but really making sure that you're learning how to cook healthy Italian food and Greek food and so forth, and really making that your goal is to eat in that way rather than just casually doing it once in a while because you might have heard that it might be healthy.
So another question is actually coenzyme 10. Do you know of this, and is it good to use?
The CoQ10?
Yeah.
It is something that I see a lot, and I see it primarily if you're on certain medications, such as the statin medications.
Can you tell us what the CoQ10 is?
This is an area that I have to admit is not my area of specialty. But I do know that it's an essential compound in the body that gets used up by certain medications. And so when I have someone who's on a statin medication, which is a medication for reducing cholesterol, in particular, those are individuals that I do encourage them to consider taking it. But as far as the exact mechanism, I can actually make it a note to put an answer to that in my blog, and I would, you know, that way I can give you some places to look online. And we can have a more accurate definition and explanation that people can refer back to. Would that be okay?
Yes, oh, definitely.
Okay.
And I'll post it on PCOS Challenge for them to move over to your blog.
Okay.
So we did touch on stress a little. Can you touch on the importance of stress management when it comes to PCOS, and what would really hinder women from PCOS to manage their stress properly?
Well, the first thing is, one of the reasons that I am the way I am on my Facebook page and on that blog is because I realize I'm working with a very stressed out population.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm trying to be as human as possible and try and make people laugh as much as possible because stress management is the big deal. And I'm trying to keep in mind that here's a poor woman who everyone around her is saying, well, if you would just do this, you know, then you could lose weight. Everyone is an expert in that area. And one of my clients recently told me that she went to a dietitian who told her, well, lose weight and then come back and I can help you. And I'm thinking, well, duh. Why do you think she would do in the first place? All of a sudden someone tells you might not have kids. You're concerned that you're infertile, and all of a sudden your appearance is becoming less and less feminine, and you're trying to feel sexy, and all these things. It's very easy to be a walking ball of stress because of the environmental pieces of it. But the thing that's real important to understand is if you have the makeup that makes you someone who has PCOS, you are naturally going to be someone who is more susceptible to stress.
Mm-hmm.
Women who have PCOS tend to feel larger amounts of stress at lower actual levels of stress. And what I find is that many of them learn early on, they get accused of being a drama queen or, you know, an histrionic or whatever. So they learn to kind of can it and kind of shove it down, and they get through their work day or they do whatever they have to do. And then when they come home at night, all that stress just blows up, and that's when the binge eating begins. So one of my mantras that my clients all hear me say is you need to learn to be more like Teflon and less like Velcro. In other words, you know, not let things hang on to you and really learn to let things roll off of you that you don't need to be dealing with. And sometimes, you know, it can be something simple like taking the fish oil, which actually helps to raise your threshold and things don't feel as stressful. That's a very common comment I get from women who've tried the fish oil. But sometimes it's learned habits, so you may want to work with a counselor who can help you develop better stress management tools. Women in general tend to multitask. They tend to take care of other people in their lives and oftentimes ahead of themselves. And so those are kinds of things that support groups can help with. And then just just learning that to not be, that's why my number one rule was, you know, to accept that you're not perfect. Nobody's perfect. I'm not a perfect eater. You know, I'll be seen at the Circle K with a bag of Fritos once in a while myself. But just really learning that stress and managing stress in the long run is going to be the thing that keeps you from aging, keeps you, it helps you to sleep better, and it helps you actually with regards to fertility and weight management as well. And they're very overlooked in the big picture.
Yeah, so I noticed that you work with people trying to conceive, and I saw 14 women who conceived within the last year on Insist. So can you tell me a little bit of what you do with the women who are working?
Well, yeah, I can't take credit for all 14. Those are from all of the. If you see the names of the practitioners,
yes,
on the side. Six of those actually came out of a practice in Minneapolis, and Michelle Gorman, she had six women in a row come to her, and she was telling me that one of them had tried IVF and failed, one of them had been told she was in early menopause, and had actually given up on being pregnant, and then boom, she was there.
Mm-hmm.
And I have to give credit also for what we're doing to a researcher at the University of Wyoming. His name is Shane Broughton, who is an omega-3 researcher. He's part of the training that I use with the PCOS practitioners who go through my training, his lecture. And he has found that if you take just a little bit of fish oil, but you don't take what's called a therapeutic dose, you can actually impair your fertility. The key is taking enough to kind of, I don't know how you would call that, kickstart your ovaries into doing the right thing. But not so little that you interfere with what you're trying to achieve. So what we do is we really closely monitor the dose of fish oil that our women are taking. We work on a kind of a low glycemic diet, really working with making sure that the carbohydrate intake is fairly stable and it's coming from healthy carbohydrates, encouraging healthy fats, encouraging getting over that fear of eating fruits and vegetables because of the carbohydrate content. And then sometimes we have women who have been on a lot of medications because of all their anxiety and stress, they've been diagnosed with a mental health or mood disorder and been given medication, which can encourage insulin resistance. So there have been cases where if we can get women off of some of those medications with healthy eating and stress management, their hormones naturally shift back to where they need to be in order to conceive.
Okay. We have about 3 minutes left, and we haven't touched on exercise.
Okay. Oh. Okay. Well, you know, I can tell you some important things about exercise. A lot of women with PCOS exercise too hard. And there is a formula on my blog for how to calculate out your heart rate. And if you're going over that, you're not burning fat and you're bulking up. Go ahead.
No, I was going to say, can you give us the web address to your blog again, please?
It's www.incyst.blogspot.com. And the easy way to find it is if you put in the search words Biggest Loser, because I did it. We were tracking the Biggest Loser last season, and it's in one of those entries that I put the formula for calculating it out.
Okay. Okay. So you were saying about exercise, tracking your heart rate or figuring out what your heart rate is?
Yeah, it's just making sure that you don't go too high, and then also making sure that you're incorporating some stress management activities such as yoga. We tend to, if it's not cardio, we don't want to do it. And really, some of the best exercises are found in yoga. One instructor I work with talks a lot about how certain poses improve circulation around the reproductive organs. It's been found to be very good for depression and anxiety. So it's really about just learning to become comfortable with moving your body and finding an activity that you enjoy and not what some fitness guru has told you to do and not overdoing it.
Yeah, well, Monica, I have learned a few things tonight.
Oh, well, that's nice.
Thank you. I'll absolutely continue to follow your blog at insyst.blogspot.com.
Yes, and I did put a welcome note up for all of your followers.
Oh,
and
good.
I encourage them under that post, if they have questions that didn't get answered, or they have questions after going through the blog, or later on if they see something, to please post it, because if you have the question, guaranteed dozens of other women do, and that way we can include it in the blog content.
Oh, good. And also, the listeners can go to www.pcoschallenge.com, and I'll also include a link to reach Monica and her blog. And Monica, have to run now, but thank you very much for being on the show, and I would love to have you back.
Anytime we can do this. I had a blast doing this, and it sounded like with all the questions you were getting that it was helping people, and that was exciting to hear.
Absolutely, absolutely. Well, thank you very much, and we'll love to have you back on soon.
Okay, take care.
Okay. Thank you, you too.
Uh-huh, bye-bye.
Thank you for listening to the PCOS Challenge Radio Show. Tune in regularly to get insights from leading experts and the support you need. Also, be sure to join our social network at PCOSChallenge.com and sign up for our newsletter. This is Sasha Ati. Help spread the word and take the PCOS Challenge.